Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, editor of MCPMag.com, and I thank you for listening. Here's what we'll cover in this episode for the week of February 25th. Microsoft opens up APIs and publishes its specs. Microsoft also gives away Visual Studio and SQL Server to students. The company also announced a SQL Server 2008 CTP in release. And hackers use old methods to steal IDs, according to a survey. Before we head to the first Redmond Radio news segment, let's take a quick break and listen to this message from our new sponsor, Citrix.
Virtualization is one of the most talked about technologies in recent history. You know the benefits already, but are your servers virtualized yet? Are you waiting because of the cost and complexity? There's no need to wait. Citrix Zen Server is the simple, low-cost way to get up and running now. In as little as 10 minutes, your servers can be virtualized. So download a free copy of Citrix Zen Server now. Just go to www.citrix.com/zenserver. That's www.citrix.com/xenserver and get your 10 minutes to Zen.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast roundup of Microsoft news and other IT happenings. As usual, I'd like to first thank listeners for downloading this show. It's because you download that this show continues. And that means we'll continue to give away Redmond t-shirts to listeners in our weekly Redmond t-shirt giveaway. And like we've been doing for the last couple of weeks, we'll continue to provide the secret word of the week for the Tech Mentor All Access Pass giveaway. If you want to know more, be sure to listen to the end of the podcast for details. Now on with the news. Here's what made headlines over at RedmondMag.com. Microsoft's attempt to buy out Yahoo might be impacting company morale in Redmond. On Friday, Microsoft Platforms and Services Division President Kevin Johnson sent out an email to employees of his department commenting on how consolidating with Yahoo might impact them and Microsoft as a whole. In particular, he addresses the overlap that might come with any major company absorption and reassigning of duties throughout the company, alluding to the company's more than 20,000 employee payroll, but not mentioning the potential layoffs that might result from the acquisition. Yahoo has something like 10,000 employees right now worldwide. In his letter, Johnson also believes that Yahoo's campus would likely be retained and that Microsoft employees should continue to do business with Yahoo insofar as it being both a partner in some technologies, such as the work the companies are doing together in messaging, as well as competitors, such as search and online presence. The general email is posted on Microsoft's Press Pass site. On another front, according to a New York Times report last week, if Yahoo won't negotiate with Microsoft regarding the takeover, Microsoft will attempt to oust Yahoo's current board of directors and replace it with one that would be more receptive. The New York Times blog stated that Microsoft would seek to nominate a slate of directors to Yahoo's board by March 13th, the final deadline for nominations, and pursue a lengthy campaign to oust the board. Yahoo, in the meantime, has been looking to partner up with News Corporation or some other potential suitor to avoid the Microsoft offer. And there are rumors swirling that major Yahoo stockholders may sue the company for not taking Microsoft's offer. The fight continues. Microsoft last Thursday said it's placing a significant emphasis on standardization and interoperability, saying it will share its APIs, release extensive documentation of its protocols, and is promising not to sue open-source developers who use Microsoft's patented protocols for non-commercial implementations. Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer outlined four new interoperability principles that include ensuring open connections, promoting data portability, enhancing support for industry standards, and fostering more open engagement with customers and the industry, including open-source communities. Microsoft has acknowledged that it needed to take more dramatic steps to appease regulators, notably the European Commission, consumers, and enterprise customers, but dismisses this move as being the only reason it made the shift. The company is allowing royalty-free use of its APIs, but says it's not giving away its intellectual property for commercial use or individual consumption. Microsoft announced that it's joining the company's upcoming Windows Small Business Server 2008 and Windows Essential Business Server 2008 for mid-sized businesses under a new Windows Essential Server Solutions umbrella. According to a comment from Bob Kelly, Microsoft Corporate Vice President, in a prepared statement, Windows Server Solutions make the benefits of enterprise-class IT accessible, affordable, and simpler for smaller organizations and their technology advisors. Both are scheduled to debut in the second half of 2008. Microsoft is planning to preview the servers at its Heroes Happen Here launch events. Microsoft has launched a new Software Plus Services Architecture Center web page on its Microsoft Developer Network. The site contains resources for architects and others still trying to figure out just what the Microsoft Plus Services concept is all about. Gianpaolo Carraro, Director of SaaS Architecture in the Architecture Strategy Team at Microsoft, defines Software Plus Services as the realization that the world is moving through a model where it won't always be software on the desktop as it was a few years ago, he said, nor would it be services in the cloud only. He builds it as a combination of local solutions and internet services interacting with one another, and the Software Plus Services Architecture Center is where you can find out more. Microsoft last week released a list of known programs that experience some sort of loss of functionality with Windows Vista SP1. The list of 12 products is based on reported issues and is not comprehensive, said the company. Many of the affected programs offer newer versions or upgrades that will make the software compatible. The list includes many known products such as Bitdefender and Zone Alarm, as well as lesser-known products such as Iron Speed Designer and Rising Personal Firewall 2007. In related news, Microsoft last week said it has stopped automatic distribution of an update required to install Vista SP1. The information is in Knowledge Base 937287, following reports that it put Vista's automatic update to cycle into an endless loop of reboots on some machines. Windows Vista SP1 is being rolled out this month, and the KB item is one of the two that must be installed before installing Vista SP1. Nick White on Microsoft's Windows Vista blog last week said, "Immediately after receiving reports of this error, we made the decision to temporarily suspend automatic distribution of the update to avoid further customer impact while we're investigating the problem." White encouraged those suffering from the issue to use System Restore to correct it, or call tech support at 866-PC-SAFETY. Microsoft last week announced that it will be giving away Visual Studio 2005 and 2008, SQL Server 2005, Windows Server Standard Edition, XNA Game Studio 2.0, and its Expression Suite of products to college students worldwide, and eventually the offer will spread to high school students. Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates announced a program called DreamSpark last week on the company's Channel 8 site. Only 11 countries are eligible right now, including the U.S., Canada, China, and several European countries, but Microsoft said it will be expanding the program to many more countries by the third quarter of this year. To determine eligibility for the free software, the system is linked to schools and organizations around the world that can confirm student status. A fully baked beta release of SQL Server 2008 is now available for testing. Microsoft released the feature complete technology preview last week. The CTP release comes just weeks after the company announced a delay in plans for its release to manufacturing version of the database server. Microsoft has already indicated that RTM would miss its goal of second half 2008 delivery. In our last bit of news, the first public beta of Silverlight 2.0 is expected from Microsoft in the next few weeks. Those that have seen the private beta report that the features outlined in a November blog posting are pretty much on track. Silverlight 2.0 will provide a subset of the .NET Framework and Windows Presentation Foundation so that developers and designers can build rich internet applications. Silverlight 1.0, which shipped in September, is primarily a media player for video and other content that uses JavaScript programming model. And that's it for news for Microsoft. Remember to listen to the very end of the podcast to find out how to enter the t-shirt giveaway, as well as the Redmond Radio Tech Mentor Pass giveaway. We have news from The Wire as well as other Redmond Media Group websites right here on Redmond Radio. Thanks once again for listening to Redmond Radio. If you enjoy listening to this program and staying informed with what's happening in IT, please pass this show around to your colleagues. And before we finish up with the rest of the podcast news, here's an update regarding what's online on the Redmond Media Group websites. Be sure to check out the February 2008 issue of Redmond Magazine, which gives a final walkthrough of Windows 2008 before the big launch event later this week. And in Redmond Channel Partner, a deep dive into managed service providers, what they are, how they work, and how partners can profit by becoming MSPs. And finally, a reminder to listen all the way to the end of the podcast for details on how to enter our weekly Redmond t-shirt giveaway, as well as the Tech Mentor All Access Pass giveaway. This is the final week. Okay, first up, some product news on the development front. Bungie Labs rolled out the full public beta of a hosted service designed to provide a web-based application development environment. Bungie Connect includes development tools and staging platforms for creators of browser-based business applications. The development tools and servers all reside in the Internet Cloud, which Bungie officials are calling a platform-as-a-service type of offering, a term that was first coined by Salesforce to describe its Force.com version. Unify released a new version of its rich Internet application development and portal integration platform. NXJ 12 includes enhancements designed to speed application deployment and better integrate with third-party application servers. The product is designed to create and deliver RIAs with AJAX functionality using standard browsers while riding atop a service-oriented architecture. SAS Institute has enhanced its SAS Enterprise Miner, SAS Text Miner, and SAS Forecast Server products. The enhancements focus on usability and performance tweaks. SAS Enterprise Miner, for example, boasts new modeling algorithms, including gradient boosting, partial least squares, and support vector machines, which SAS says lets users build more stable and more accurate models. SAS also says it boosts support for unstructured data from sources such as customer feedback forms, blogs, and call centers in its SAS Text Miner tool. Users can also import Text Miner results into SAS Enterprise Miner. SAS Forecast Server now boasts an improved user interface, a more configurable outlier detection facility, support for more complex filtering, and more than a dozen new project management macros. Who'll have the biggest implementation of 802.11n? According to Cisco, it'll be Duke University. The company's hardware figures large in Duke's campus-wide deployment of an 802.11n wireless network, complete with more than 2,500 Cisco access points. Duke plans to target about 6 million square feet of its campus with Cisco's Aeronet 1250 series access points. According to Duke CIO Tracy Futhi, Cisco's 802.11 technology will help Duke enhance the quality of campus life, enable new learning spaces, and provide access to course materials and resources for Duke's user base of 45,000 students, faculty, and staff. Now, we love surveys here at Redmond Radio, so here are a few that got our attention. CA conducted a global survey on virtualization in the last few months and found that although 54% of large enterprises around the globe rate management of their virtual server environment as a critical or high IT priority, only 45% of them thought their companies were doing it effectively. At these companies, each with more than $250 million in annual revenue, servers, storage, and applications were the top three areas the respondents wanted to virtualize. Here's an interesting U.S. statistic. Although 70% of all respondents worldwide found server virtualization important, 88% of U.S. companies ranked servers as the most important area. 65% said they were most successful with the server virtualization efforts. One of the areas that is lacking is justifying virtualization through some concrete ROI, and the survey showed this to be an ongoing problem. Although over half of respondents say they are extremely confident or confident that their companies are maximizing ROI, only 28% report having a method to actually measure it. The full report from CA can be read at CA's website. It's at ca.com/about/virtual_survey. Does your disaster recovery plan allow your company to suffer through an outage or disaster that can take your main systems offline for a week? Then your company is like most, and according to a Gartner survey, that's a bad idea. Gartner surveyed 359 IT and risk management pros in the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. and found that only 77% have a plan for a power outage or fire, while 72% have a plan for a natural disaster such as a flood or hurricane. At least half have developed BC or DR plans for IT outages, virus-related downtime, terror incidents, or failure on the part of one or more of service providers. Interestingly, this survey showed that most disaster recovery plans are for a single facility outage. Planning for regional disasters actually dropped in priority over the last 2 years. Even more interesting, the research found that organizations are now taking pandemic planning warnings more seriously, 29% last year versus just 8% in 2005. And Gartner says the rise is likely due to mounting concern about the bird flu virus. And in our last final item, a study by Javelin Strategy has shown that ID theft is in decline, and much of it has to do with the laziness on the part of hackers. It seems that in hacking, as in economics, efficiency is king. If the cumulative cost of activity proves to be prohibitively expensive, hackers will employ other cheats to obtain the results thereafter. The upshot for enterprise IT organizations, says Javelin Strategy, is that ID theft is more likely to involve time-tested methods, such as telephone fraud, than blockbuster data breaches. Every year, Javelin conducts what it claims to be the industry's most comprehensive study of ID theft, or ID-related fraud, annually surveying 5,000 or more respondents to assess the overall state of severity. The researchers said that ID theft continues to decline in the U.S., even as the cost to consumers on a per-incident basis rises. In 2006, identity fraud was down by 12% over its year-ago goal, representative of a total fraud detection of $6 billion. The per-incident cost to consumers, however, was $691, a 25% increase over the previous year. While information security breaches dominate the headlines thanks to a number of high-profile data breaches or cases in which sensitive data has quite simply been lost, most fraudsters are using lower-tech methods to pull off their exploits. Javelin said that a large number of ID thieves are turning to telephone fraud. Access through mail and telephone transactions grew from just 3% of all ID theft incidents in 2006 to 40% last year. This is part of a technique that researchers dub phishing, which is a fancy term for using telecommunications, VoIP, and other technologies to obtain information from consumers. What's driving the phishing shift? To a degree, the success enterprises have had in locking down their information security assets. As consumers shift their more financial transactions to secure online arenas, fraudsters have become more creative in utilizing the phone lines. The typical scheme involves a phone call to an unsuspecting consumer from fraudulent nonprofit organizations or other financial institutions. While telephone fraud itself is nothing new, the increased use of wireless communications to perpetrate phishing exploits is noteworthy, according to Javelin Research. Last year, wireless phone accounts accounted for 32% of new account fraud last year, up from 19% the year before. And that's news from the wire and this week's episode of Redmond Radio. As usual, before we end this thing, I'd like to remind faithful Redmond Radio listeners, as we do every week, that you can win a Redmond t-shirt in my weekly t-shirt giveaway. To enter, just send me an email with the new t-shirt giveaway phrase, "I want a t-shirt," on the subject line of your message, to mdomingo@1105media.com. That's mdomingo@1105media.com. And note the phrase is "I want a t-shirt," not Redmond t-shirt, as it has been in the past. Entries not sporting the new phrase will be ignored. By the way, that's also the address to enter the Tech Mentor giveaway. If you want to enter both the t-shirt giveaway as well as the contest for the Tech Mentor Pass, just send one email with Tech Mentor Pass on the subject line of your message instead of "I want a t-shirt," and put this week's secret phrase, "digital security," in the body of your message. That's digital security, one of the more popular sessions that Bruce Rogot talks about at the Tech Mentor Conference. Tech Mentor takes place March 30th through April 3rd at San Francisco's Moscone Center, and it's the 10th anniversary of the IT event. Because Tech Mentor is co-located with the VS Live Developer Conference, that means the All Access Pass provides access to both events. This is the last week of the Tech Mentor contest, by the way, so be sure to enter by March 1st. We'll announce a winner in the next podcast, which will be just enough time for the winner to book hotel and airline tickets. By the way, congratulations to Alex H., this week's t-shirt winner. Alex's entry also gets him a spot among only a handful of people who've entered the Tech Mentor contest so far. Well, that's it for this episode of Redmond Radio. I'm Michael Domingo. I'd like to thank Citrix for their sponsorship of this program, and I once again want to thank all you listeners who continue to support Redmond Radio by streaming and downloading this program. See you here next week.